And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is today's issues. Each of my guests is discussing an issue relevant to today. My next guest examines how some companies thrive despite uncertainty, chaos, and luck from his latest book titled Great by Choice, co-authored with Jim Collins. And if you want to call in and ask a question or join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Morten Hansen is the co-author of Great by Choice, as I said before, and he is a management professor at the University of California, Berkeley School of Information and at Inicet in France. Formerly a professor at Harvard Business School, he holds his PhD from the Graduate School of Business at Stanford University, where he was a Fulbright scholar. He has also been a senior management consultant with the Boston Consulting Group in London, Stockholm, and San Francisco. Professor Hansen regularly delivers keynote addresses and consults for companies around the world. He's a native of Norway and a former silver medalist in the Norwegian Junior Track and Field Championships. He lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with his wife and two daughters. He enjoys running, hiking, great food, and traveling. Joining us from the Bay Area, how are you today, Morten?
Hey, Bill, I'm doing great.
Well, thank you for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. I love to have thought leaders like yourself on the show. Now, your book, Great by Choice, is in the series of Jim Collins's great books. I guess the best place to start with is describing the methodology that you used to write the book. You selected companies because they succeeded in extreme and uncertain environments, and out of 20,400 companies that you looked at, you selected only seven companies as what you call 10Xers. One of those seven is Amgen, which is located right here in Ventura County. So talk to us about the methodology that you use to gather your data.
Hey, Bill, as you said before, what we are interested in this book is to understand why do some people and some companies and some leaders come out great, they prevail, and they achieve greatness in an environment that is full of uncertainty, chaos, and disruption and change. And that is really the business world that we live in today and we're going to be living in for probably the rest of our lives.
You said it.
And it's true for every individual, too. You know, you are people who have secure jobs, they lost their jobs. So there is the question is, how can you prevail and do great in those kinds of extreme environments? So what we did is that we said, well, let's take a look. Back 30 years, which companies have done that in industries that clearly had that characteristic? They were uncertain, full of change, full of uncertainty. So we started out by looking at all public companies in the U.S. and over the last 30 years, the 20,000 data points, as you mentioned. And then we filtered it down and said, who have exceptional performance? And then you get to very much fewer companies. And then you say, who have exceptional performance in those extreme industries? So there you have semiconductors, software, personal computers, and biotech. And if you look at biotech industry over the last 30 years, the winner there with the best shareholder return over the long term is Amgen. And then we pick these seven exceptional companies, and then we compare them to their industry peers that did not achieve the same performance. They kind of run the same marathon. They started out together in this industry, but the winner achieved this exceptional performance and the others did not. And the question we ask in this book and we provide answer is, why?
Well, and it is a very it's a very interesting answer that you come up with. But before we get to that, notably on that absent from that list is Apple Computer, because software and also hardware, computer hardware, were two of the categories that you looked at that were very volatile. So that my listeners understand and might not question or might question why Apple isn't on that list, why wasn't Apple included?
So Apple, it has a very interesting history. And if you look at Apple's performance from its beginning in the 1970s until the late 90s, that period, Apple did not do well. It's not a great stock. If you bought into that stock at its IPO in the late 1980 and held that until to the 2000 about, you didn't do better than the market. In fact, you did worse.
Yeah.
The Apple story is one where Steve Jobs come back in 1997 and start turning it around and then achieve greatness. But for the first 25 years, it is a story of being average. The winner in that industry over the last 30 years is Microsoft.
There you go.
So we talk about, of course, Apple's coming back, Steve Jobs coming back, and he makes the transition. And that's a great comeback. But you have to look at Apple in two two eras, basically.
All right. My guest is Morten Hansen, author of the book Great by Choice. And in the book, Morten, you talk about these seven companies and you call them 10Xers. What is a 10Xer?
Basically, what these companies did is that they won by a lot. They beat their industry average by 10 times in terms of shareholder performance. And so we use the moniker 10X to denote that. These are true great winners. And the question then is, you know, what did they do to make that possible? And we found some very interesting counterintuitive principles. You would think, for example, that they were the most innovative, that if you're living in an uncertain, changing environment, the ones that innovate the most should be having the best performance. And it's not true. Some of them were quite innovative. Others were not so innovative. You know, if we talk about Apple, Apple was a very innovative company in its early days. It produced the Macintosh, for example. But it didn't lead to performance. So innovation is not the trump card that we think it is. Now, we're not saying innovation is not important. It is important. But there is a threshold effect in every industry. So in the biotech industry, you've got to be very innovative just to be a player, to be in the game.
Sure.
But beyond that, you need to have other things. You need to have the discipline to execute and do well. So if you think about Intel, the semiconductor company that won by a big margin in that industry, they were very good at innovation, and they met the threshold. But beyond that, how they beat the others, who were also innovative, they beat it because they could manufacture at scale and deliver those products better than anybody else. So Intel delivers is a better slogan for understanding their success than is Intel innovate.
All right, that makes sense. But these companies do innovate. They just innovate in a different way, which you describe in your book, and you have a great metaphor for that. Talk to us about the way in which they innovate, which is maybe different from an Apple computer or an AMD in the same space.
Right, so we call it fire bullets, then cannonballs. So imagine you want to get into a new market and innovate. Now you can do it the following way. You can put a lot of gunpowder into your cannon and everything you have into the cannon, and you fire the cannon and it misses the target. In other words, you are betting big. You're making one big product introduction, you're making one big investment or one big acquisition, and you hope that it will hit the target and do well. The problem with that is that the risk is high, and more often than not, you fail. So now imagine instead you start with experiments. You go out and say, okay, I'm going to try a small product. I'm going to try to get into the market a little bit, experiment, try it out. I learn something. Then I do something else, and so on and so forth. Then at one point, I know so much about how this new market works. Then I can make the investment. In other words, you first fire some small bullets. You try it out with an experiment. Then you make the big investment. So, for example, when Progressive Insurance, one of our winners, decided to get into the safe driver market, the biggest part of the market for insurance, auto insurance, instead of saying, hey, you know, let's make a major investment across the nation in the safe driver market, they decided, let's try out Texas and Florida with some small experiments, see if we can sell insurance, see if we can tweak it to make good profit. They did that, then they added some more states, more experiments. And after 3 years, they said, you know, look, now we know so much. Let's do a national rollout and then go aggressive. That is first firing bullets, then cannonball.
All right, more
experiment, and then you make the investment.
And that makes perfect sense. But how is that different from doing target markets where you're doing a test market in an isolated area like a Procter & Gamble does or one of the big packaged goods houses where they test things all the time?
Well, so market testing is a good way of doing bullets. And in that is an industry, and that's an area of business that has done it for a while. But what about other areas, product innovation? We see it less there, and we see it less in other industries. We see it maybe in consumer goods industries, and they're learning to do it. Some industries are more ahead of this than others.
Got it. My guest is Morten Hansen. So, Morten, talk to us about the discipline that sets these 10Xer companies apart and something that you call the 20-mile march.
Yeah, so, you know, here's a fascinating thing that we found in this research, which is we started looking at the leaders, and we asked the question, well, what made them different from their industry peers? And you would maybe think that they were more creative or more visionary, better risk takers, that they could see the future and then lead their company toward that future. Turns out to be wrong. One of the things they had is fanatic discipline. And that means an extreme commitment to the goal, plans, and actions that they had set forth. And the way that they made that possible in their company was to implement what we call a 20-mile march. Take an example of Stryker, a medical device company under the chief executive, John Brown. Now, he started the company saying, as a small company, we're going to grow earnings 20% every year, year in and year out, forever. That was what his principle was, a march. What he did is that he put everything possible into the company to make that happen. And then he said, in a bad year, no excuses, we got to hit that mark every year, year in and year out. If the market, if we're in a recession, we're going to hit it. No excuses. That was the first part. But then he said, the second part, in boom years, everything is going great. We're holding back. We're leaving growth on the table. We don't want that crazy growth. We're going to hold it back so that we are in good shape. We don't overextend ourselves. We don't get kind of the wrong people into the company. So in boom years, they only grew about 20% or a bit more. They didn't grow like competition, 50%. So here you have an upper bound, a lower bound, and you're marching for the long term, and you get the best results.
And it is a counterintuitive idea. My guest is Morten Hansen, co-author of the book Great by Choice. So, Morten, on your list of the 10Xers is Intel, the manufacturer of chips. And Andy Grove was the former CEO of Intel. He wrote a book called Only the Paranoid Survive. You introduce a new term called productive paranoia. What is productive paranoia?
So that's another leadership quality that they had. It basically is that you're hyper-vigilant about what's going on around you. And you're worried, constantly worried. That's the paranoid part. But then, in addition, you need to channel that worry, that concern, into productive action. You can't just be afraid and hunker down. You need to take some action as a leader. So what these leaders did, for example, is that they built cash reserves. They hedged on technologies. They built in safety margins. So they would constantly be prepared for the storms ahead. You know, there is that saying, you know, Andy Grove was one. Herb Kelleher at Southwest Airlines was another one. And he liked to say, you know, people like to say about him that he predicted the 11 of the last three recessions. He always thought it was a recession around the corner. Many times he was wrong, but it meant that he said we better have our cost structure in place before the next recession.
very clever indeed. So also in your book, there are so many counterintuitive ideas. An interesting contradiction that you introduce is your SMAC formula. And in the more uncertain the environment is, the more that you need an SMAC formula. What is SMAC?
Yeah, we call it the SMAC formula.
SMAC.
So what is this? Now, in uncertain environments, you need to be focused and keep marching and keep yourself on track. You can't just blow with the wind saying, you know, hey, there's a trend next year, so let's leap onto that trend. No, you need an operating formula, a formula for success that keeps the enterprise focused and on target. That's the SMAC recipe. So what is this thing? For example, at the beginning of deregulation in the airline industry, Howard Putnam, then the CEO of Southwest Airlines, he sat down and wrote it out for Southwest. And he said, here's our operating principles. You know, a lot of your listeners have probably flown with Southwest Airlines, so they will recognize this. Well, you fly city to city, frequent departures, rapid turnaround gates, only 737s, no frills, low cost, and so on and so forth. Very specific principles. And we all recognize that, and we like them so much for that because they're reliable and on time and so on, and better than others. Now, that is their SMAC recipe. It is systematic. There is an economic model behind it. That's what that means. It's methodological. It works. They have proven it. And it is consistent over time. It's not something they change from year to year. They stick to it. And this having this SMAC recipe is basically a clarity, a piercing insight into how your company works and why it makes money and why you should continue with this model. That's what the SMAC recipe gives you, and it creates some clarity and focus in midst a lot of uncertainty.
Well, without a doubt. And we've had Mr. Putnam as a guest on our show. He reinforced exactly what you had to say. My guest is Morten Hansen. So, Morten, you guys came up with so many innovative and interesting thoughts that came out of your book, Great by Choice. One that everybody's familiar with, a term that everybody's familiar with, is return on investment, ROI for short. You said that 10Xers outperform their counterparts, and you actually developed a new metric in the book, talking about luck, because no matter what the environment, no matter what the circumstances, these 10Xers were outperforming their peers as well. And you created a term called return on luck. What is return on luck? How do you define something like that?
Yeah, you know, this, I think, is the most fascinating part of this book, at least for me personally, because you can ask the question, hey, you're looking at these great winners in these uncertain environments, weren't they just luckier than the rest? Right? It's a fair question. So we said, okay, hey, how can we study luck? And we figure out we can. Because think about luck as events happening to you. These are good luck and bad luck events. These are unpredictable, they're out of your control, and they're potentially significant. That happens in your personal life, and it happens to every company.
Sure.
They could be a deep industry recession you hadn't thought about. It could be a competitor coming out with a product that blows you away. It could be a number of things. So we just tallied up all these events across the companies, and here's what we found. The winners did not have more luck events, good or bad, than the average performers. So in other words, it cannot be that they got more luck, good or bad. It has to be the return on luck. In other words, what they got in return for the luck that they made the most of those luck events. That's what we found. And I think that's very insightful in the sense of what these companies did, because it's not the luck you are given to you, it's what you do with that. And what these leaders and companies did so well, when good luck moments happened, they recognized it, and they seized the moment, and they executed brilliantly. The bad companies, they squandered their good luck. That was a big difference.
That is a huge difference. Carpe diem. My guest is Morten Hansen. So, Morten, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Great by Choice?
So, you know, building on that last discussion we had there, that greatness is not a function of luck or circumstance. It is the choices that you make, the path you followed, in this case, the principles that these companies followed that we detail in the book. And I think that's true for companies. I think it's true for individual careers, and I think it's true for a small business and a large business. That is the choices. We have a choice as leaders and as individuals to achieve greatness.
Oh, that is great, and that is encouraging, especially in these times. My guest has been Morten Hansen, co-author of the book Great by Choice, Uncertainty, Chaos, and Luck, Why Some Thrive Despite Them All. And if you've piqued the interest of some of my listeners, Morten, and they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
So they can go to my website, which is mortenhansen.com. That's MORTENHANSEN.com, and you can find some more information about our book.
Oh, that is great. Morten, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Thank you.